"Let me just run this by my lawyer" is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
The First Baptist Church of Venice was the backdrop of the Black Lives Matter protests a few weeks ago. The church was shuttered and looked to be on the path of demolishment. Speakers used this moment to discuss the injustices and the trauma that ensued. The First Baptist Church in Venice was a way station for people in need. 45 years after slavery had ended, and the people made this a watchtower and refuge. Black, Native, Indigenous people were in Venice since 1910. Ask any of the gentrifiers or business improvement district employees and they will not be able to tell you. They can tell you how to enliven the area by getting the unhoused community out of the area. And as we know, the high percentage of people that are unhoused in Los Angeles, California are Black and Latinx. The area for Black and Native was to survive, endure, and thrive and enjoy their existence when the world was not for their existence at all. Now we're in 2020 with the same struggle. Anti-unhoused sentiment is part of the movement now. The time is now to move and agitate, as Frederick Douglass said. Time to get into good trouble, as the recently departed John Lewis said. He also said something from 1963 March on Washington that I will paraphrase: due to Trump kidnapping citizens and putting them in centers, and the Project Ruth Key and recreation centers being ended, and the eagerness of NIMBYs and law enforcement to criminalize the unhoused. Now, John Lewis said this: "I want to know, what side is the government on? The revolution is at hand, and we must free ourselves of the chains of political and economic slavery."
All right, are you sure?
Yeah.
All right, if you can hear me, clap once. If you can hear me, clap twice. Okay, if you can hear me, show me your boogie. All right, thanks for people that humor me. All right, so my name is Paulina. I'm really honored to be here in Venice. Thank you guys for welcoming me. The Venice community, love you guys. It was really cool to learn about what's going on over here. A lot of similarities, as Theo knows, what's happening in Chinatown, and that's where I was born. So I'm here to represent Homeless Healthcare. It's the agency I work for. And we've been trying to house people for the last 33 years, okay? We provide services through, housing, through if they want to go to treatment, and our main philosophy is that we are harm reduction. You know, so harm reduction, meeting people where they are at. So, service providers, Our motivational interviewing tells us we need to meet people where they are at. And this is what homeless healthcare does. You know, we have a needle exchange downtown. We've been running services through COVID. We've had the E16 hitting the streets. We've had our doctor and nurse practitioner out there testing people and giving the unhoused people some education and testing and Narcan kits. And pipes, clean pipes, because we're in the middle of a pandemic. We can't be sharing pipes right now. But so what I do with homeless healthcare is they kind of have me in a unique area. I'm co-located at Twin Towers. I'm by myself. I'm away from my coworkers, and I have to put up with the cops for my people. Okay? So all the stories of these hashtags, I see them on a daily, every day, Monday through Friday. And I get my repeats. The director wanted me to be here, and we really wanted to say, defund the police. Defund the police. Must go. She's got to go. She needs to get out of there.
Kinney Boulevard. It's Washington Boulevard, Little Washington, West and East. It was 99.99% black owned. And now you can go over there and buy a $17 latte or a $3,000 rocking chair. That's 3 months of my rent. So that's why we march today. We march today because Brother Africa is no longer with us. A relative whose life matters. I'm going to turn the mic over to the person named Kathy. Kathy Sweetser. I apologize that we didn't get to have you speak earlier.
I can't hear you.
The promises to human rights. But I'm here talking on behalf of Services Not Sweeps. I want to say a little bit about criminalization today. All of you Venice community members know that over the past many years, criminalization of the homeless has been used to move people along. These are our community members, these are our neighbors, and people are using the police as a tool to move people out of Venice. Every time there's a police encounter with a homeless person, that causes an opportunity where violence can occur. These minor, low-level offenses that are being enforced in Venice, these are low-level smoking, riding a bike, things that should never be criminalized. These criminalization of our homeless people in Venice is used simply to create an opportunity for warrants to issue, so that they can be arrested, so that they can be harassed. In 2020, a report came out saying that a third of the police use of force in Los Angeles was against homeless people, despite a tiny fraction of the people of the total police encounters being with homeless people. And this is because people are using these opportunities to to move people out of their neighborhoods. We need to, people who are here, who live in Venice, talk to your neighbors. Tell them that there's no need to call the police because someone's having a mental health crisis. They're part of our community too. We have to ensure that people in our neighborhoods are not criminalized, are not constantly harassed, and are not moved out. Thank you.
Unhoused News. West Valley panel on Monday, July 20th at 3 p.m. I was a panelist on there. And I noticed the imbalance of power that was accorded to me. I was invited, which I graciously accepted, but I also could not help but notice the lion's share of the time was people that had not experienced houselessness. They were trouting out dog whistles that were demonizing unhoused people. And to that end, I felt I had to scrap my speech and to speak from the realities of the situation. In particular, unhoused vigilantism, which Mayor Eric Garcetti skips over and returned the onus back onto unhoused people. In other news, Governor Newsom announces $600 million to help house the unhoused. Up for change for the negative and an anti-trans rule to discriminate against trans women. This is due to Ben Carson, who is a part of this movement. This will reverse Obama-era rule on the issue. It also attacks gender identity community. A trans woman will be forced to go to a men's shelter. Ex-police officer John Rabaga was sentenced to 4 years in prison for forcing an unhoused man to lick a public urinal. Rabaga threatened to beat the man and stuff his face in the toilet if he didn't lick the urinal. Reginald Ramonis, the other officer, will be sentenced next week. In other news, unhoused veteran Caleb Harris delivers his own child in the car the family sleeps in. Upon hearing the news, Council President Nuri Martinez of Los Angeles took to Twitter saying this should not happen to any family. But her record shows that she has gone out of her way to demonize and use the dog whistle about her family while she criminalizes other unhoused families in the communities that she resides as well as overseas. In Ocala, Florida, the unhoused is racking up thousands of dollars in fines for being poor and unhoused. Some are going to jail. And this is Unhoused News.
These are all things you have in common with my cousin Brendan Glenn, who was murdered by an LAPD officer. Now, I could talk about his case. I could talk about how the chief of police said in three different press conferences that this was a homicide, and how Jackie Lacey stood in the way of justice, and that she is the reason that so many families, at least 608 other families, have never gotten justice for the killings and the brutality that they have experienced.
Jackie Lacey.
Yeah, Jackie Lacey. Seriously, God. But what I really want to talk about is how he lived. And I want you to understand how Brendan lived and who he was. Because when we say their names, we don't mean that you watch the video of them dying, that you watch life leave their eyes, you watch them screaming out to their mother in these vulnerable moments. We mean that you understand that they were alive and living like you. They had dreams like you. They had kids like you. They had parents like you. They went to school like you. These are human beings like you. And we use the terms, when Brendan was killed, they used terms like black homeless man, never using his name. And that was all to dehumanize him, to make it seem like because he was black and because he was experiencing homelessness in that time, his life was forgotten and not as important as someone else's.
Right. Dang.
Say their name. Because people will not be diminished to BuzzFeed articles and clickbait and taglines. These are human beings.
Right. Yeah.
So, say his name.
Brandon Glenn.
Say his name.
Brandon Glenn.
Thank you guys so much.
Why doesn't everyone stop and do something, Mommy? And as we would drive and hike and walk through the streets of Venice, one of the now most affluent areas in one of the most affluent cities in one of the wealthiest states in the richest country in the world, it was difficult as his parent to try and answer his questions, to make peace with his suffering, to explain injustice, inhumanity, and cruelty to a child. And now today, his little brother comes with equally difficult questions to answer, the hardest of which is, Daddy, when did they start not liking black people? And as we come together today on this ground to gather in memory of Brandon, in solidarity with unhoused lives and black lives, and in recognition of the American story so many of us have been hiding from or hidden by, the intersectionality of Brandon's story has become all of our stories. You see, Brandon's fate was sealed, like many of ours, by the twin evils of American society. The two pillars that we all walk through when we are born inside this country. The two components that, from inception, needed each other. Racism and capitalism.
Right. Yeah.
You cannot separate the two. One is an economic system that requires, that necessitates the exploitation of a set of people, and the other, race, is the means by which that set of people was created, then divided, and then subjugated. Brandon could have been in my family. It struck me how much we looked alike. He could have been my brother. And he, like me, is caught and trapped in the inescapable web of a country that devalued his existence on every level. To be poor and black in America is by design. It is not an accident. It is by design. And I realize that many of us, for many years, too many years, have comfortably turned our heads from this ugly truth. But it is our truth, and we come together now in 2020 in the spirit of truth. Yeah, right. We do come together in the spirit of truth, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Brandon's truth, and Margaret Mitchell's truth, and Richard Castillo's truth, and our unhoused have become the forgotten of the downtrodden. And there is no more time to run from the systematic economic deprivation that America's black people have been forced to endure, and the legacy of poverty that we are now viciously trapped in, relegated to housing projects, environmentally unsafe neighborhoods, reduced to being the unseen and unhoused, and locked out of the wealth acquisition the rest of the country has access to. For me, Brandon's case highlights two things: police brutality, excessive force, and the other is police protection and the government's repeated unwillingness to prosecute.
Right.
Until we are ready to smash this system where district attorneys refuse to bring police in front of a jury, protected by probable cause and qualified immunity, and my life was in danger, and he was going for my gun, and he had superhuman strength, then we will watch this story again and again and again. We have a system that must be changed when the color of my skin makes me suspicious and justifies a 911 call, which ends up with me being dead when I have committed no crime. In Brendan's case, if you don't know, his murderer's own police chief recommended prosecution. The cop whose gun he was allegedly grabbing says he didn't feel anything. And an independent civilian review board recommended prosecution. And who comes in? Your finest DA, Jackie Lacey, to say...
Jackie Lacey!
Jackie Lacey!
Yeah, and here she comes, like she has so many times before, to say, sorry, we don't have a case. We have a systems problem, people, and it is time for a new one. This is now a revolution and a reckoning of the American story. The garbage story that for too long has had a vested interest in our separation. A story that from its very inception was rife with contradictions, with the words freedom and justice for all, while black people had no semblance of freedom at the time, as we moved through history through a series of bondage, first chains and whips, then into fear, terror, and nooses, on through forced segregation, and into our modern day reality, when someone can call the cops on me for anything they see as a threat, most notably the color of my skin. When our indigenous ancestors were all murdered or herded like cattle and marched together straight into homelessness, but the history that we are still force-fed in kindergarten leads us to believe that the America's original genocide was a fanciful tale of a great feast and a child's game of cowboys and Indians is bull.
Right.
When the western lands we stand on were annexed by military might and taken from Mexico, a country that was still scarred from its own takeover by a different set of European colonizers, a country whose indigenous Aztec population had already been buried under disease and war and famine and the oppression of European colonial imperialism. America, whose stench of its origins excluded women from political process by design, excluded Asians from entering the country, our country, under which the regime of Nazi Germany laid their blueprints after carefully studying United States Jim Crow laws, still stinks. When George Floyd was murdered, a piece of all of us died for real, and a protest began, and we stood. And the protest turned into an uprising, and the uprising turned into a movement. And now here we are, and the movement has become a revolution. And I said a few weeks ago that this is the resistance that is rising from George Floyd's last breaths. But now as I sit with the protests that have become the largest protest movement in American history, let that sink in, people. We are now a part of the largest social movement for equality in American history. Every state of the union is rising up, and I realize that not only do we have each other as accomplices in the fight, but we have the collective force of our millions of ancestors guiding us. Yeah. To quote one of my heroes, James Baldwin, and I'm quoting, America, all of your buried corpses are beginning to speak. And the corpses are asking that we fight more than police brutality. Our ancestors are asking that we fight more than 400 years of colonial occupation. We are now here fighting for a way of life. We are fighting against the belief system that has pitted us against each other, that teaches little boys and little girls that their only choices are on the margins and in the edges. We are gathering to break down the polarities that America has chosen for us that have so profoundly divided us against the words that only serve to deny our togetherness and simultaneously strip us of our uniqueness. We are fighting for acceptance. All of us fighting for recognition of the spaces that exist in between, where we can safely love each other in the middle. We are fighting for a new way of life, and everybody out there, silence is no longer an option. People of color and Brandon and the poor have been forced to live on the edges and choked and starved from the center, and we cannot escape it. And privately, in the darkest hour of night, white people know this truth too. And that's why you are here. You too know that the level of hate and subjugation that has been around the necks of your BIPOC brothers and sisters is no longer sustainable. And the senseless and inhumane deaths that we now see daily have jolted you, have shocked you. And you are now waking up, and you too will not have it any longer. And you are tapping into our collective pain and our collective suffering, and we will heal it with love. Yeah.
is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. I'm here at the protest today for celebrating Unhoused Black Lives Matter, as among other issues. In the studios today, I'm here interviewing a gentleman that had some powerful words to say in the midst of our ending of the protest. So let us get his name and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, hi, my name is Sultan. It's S-U-L-T-A-N. Last name is Sharif, S-H-A-R-R-I-E-F, as in Frank.
You mentioned that people didn't get to know the Unhoused community here. What brought that insight on?
Well, so I've been working on in the block for the last, since the beginning, since March 26th. Mm-hmm. I live on Dudley in Venice. I used to work in Michigan and like tourism through the Michigan Film Office.
Right, right.
And so, you know, we do economic multipliers and economic impact, stuff like that. So as soon as they announced they're closing the boardwalk, I'm like, that's interesting. There's 10 million visitors to the Venice Beach Boardwalk every year. Mm. What's going to happen then? Then they said they're closing all of the restaurants. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, but that food feeds, like, there's 800,000 visitors a month eating at various restaurants. What's going to happen then? Yes. And there's a drug version of that network. And right, and then they close the libraries.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, the, and all of the indoors inside of Starbucks, mm-hmm. which has the infrastructure for people charging their phones.
Exactly.
Right? And so, like, what's going to happen then? Mm-hmm. So immediately, as soon as I hear that, my brain, because of my old job, goes to, like, all of these services that are going to need somebody to replace them and all of these resources. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting around for the semis to come rolling in or mm-hmm. something, you know, to help.
Right, right.
Nothing. First mm-hmm. weekend. And then I start seeing people who I know. I've been living there 10 years fighting and different things. Mm-hmm. He took this tent. Then they released 1,100 people from L.A. County. Mm-hmm. And then they all hit the block.
Yeah.
So I came out, saw this young man singing who had just gotten released in flip-flops. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even tell him what COVID was.
Yeah,
he was like, why are people wearing masks? Like, what the heck is going on? And then he hit the block in, like, downtown, mm-hmm. then came to Hollywood, landed in Venice. So mm-hmm. I ended up starting this whole project with him, trying to document a lot of the stuff. But anyway, so since then, March 26th, all of April, I ended up getting a fight with my friend, so I ended up homeless for a month. Mm-hmm. April, although I was privileged enough to have family who were able to get me a hotel or whatever. Mm-hmm. So all of April, found a spot in May, and then now all of June. And so as I'm working with everybody and trying to help people work on various little plans, we tried to build a unit that ended up getting run over by a pickup truck in a threatening block type way. Another brother trying to work with him. We started a little mobile mosque, helping people get access to instruments, use the phone, use the library. You know, the libraries are closed, getting people power. And so anyway, so then all, then Eric, you know, the thing happens with George Floyd.
Yeah.
And so everything blows up.
Exactly.
And so now everyone forgets about COVID and they all start like coming outdoors. Mm-hmm. Right. But they've been struggling on the block. People drop off food. They do drop off food. But a lot of what people need, like a way to use the phone regularly, a way to, you know, just very basic things outside of just dropping off your Whole Foods bag because you bought, which is lovely and beautiful and mm-hmm. absolutely necessary. So anyway, so then that's been a big thing, a lot of trying to document, I've tried 8 or 9 different ways and failed to put out some sustainable resources. The whole time I'm thinking, like, I'm just going to wait for the giant nonprofit.
Infrastructure. And
Urban Alchemy does some cool stuff. They have showers that bounce on a different day every week. Muslim brothers, they have 2 bathrooms and washing station that are always on 3rd and Rose. They're mm-hmm. out there for like 12 hours a day.
Right.
Actually more than that, I think 7 a.m. to, I don't know, maybe it's 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. But anyway, they're fully manned, they're mm-hmm. cleaned regularly. So there's a bunch of people doing beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. But in short, like there's 3 places to charge your phone in like a 3-mile radius. You gotta wait in line like an hour. If you don't get in the shower line soon enough, mm-hmm. you could end up going 2 to 3 weeks because it goes on a different block and you can't just roll up on somebody else's block and get in front of the shower
exactly.
line. So you have to wait your turn when it's on your block. So if that one day you don't get it, especially the elderly and the person I was working with has a hernia, mm-hmm. right, he's not making it to the front of the line mm-hmm. and there's all these people who need to shower. Mm-hmm. So then he misses that week. Then he misses the next week.
Yeah.
You know, and then he misses the 3rd week. Mm-hmm. So then I'm trying to work with him on buildings and stuff and he's like, I can't take a shower.
Mm-hmm.
And you close the beaches or at least turned off the hot water mm-hmm. there. So unless he's down to run and jump in the ocean or like take a cold shower in front
of
everybody.
He's already disabled.
Right.
So that's thing.
So anyway, so it's that type of stuff that you're seeing and you're experiencing in this true story mm-hmm. of these individuals, and each one is unique mm-hmm. to their challenges, be it like, you know, family issues, mental health issues, drug issues, whatever, personality issues just sometimes, whatever mm-hmm. it might be. And so then in navigating and trying to work within that, you know, boom, George Floyd happens and people take to the streets and they're demanding justice and they're demanding all of these things, mm-hmm. but they're walking past all of the people who are going through all of the things that they are demanding.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like a call to action mm-hmm. is happening. And all of this is 100% necessary,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of like from the vantage point of the person on the street
mm-hmm.
for the last, I don't know, what have we been in, 4 weeks?
Yeah.
They're looking like, okay, oh, beautiful. Thank you for showing up. Okay, Black Lives Matter. Thank you for showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Week two, Black Lives Matter. Thank mm-hmm. you for showing up. Week three, Black Lives Matter. Thank you so much for showing up. You still haven't taken a shower, mm-hmm. right? You still barely, you know, eating cold food.
Mm-hmm.
It's left over. Your phone got stolen because these new cats hit the block,
mm-hmm.
you know, that didn't kind of know who things are, and you don't really know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You think they're over there by the golf course,
mm-hmm.
or he might be over there down by this place, but he might kick it with that guy, but I don't want to with him if he kick it with that guy.
Right.
Because then that might make some energy that I'm not trying to get into. So anyway, it's all, you know, these politics.
Right? Oh, yeah,
and so this is the reality of their lives. So
mm-hmm.
then this one was homeless focused,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's like, and we're talking about infrastructure and government
mm-hmm.
and all of these things, but some of these other elements on the block, you know, three people got kicked off the block Saturday.
Yeah.
Most people don't even know what that means. And that's not getting talked about. And so that means that it's being enabled to happen.
And it's traumatizing.
Because
the gentleman I noticed, because I'm unhoused too. So right. Trust me, all of the stuff that's been going on, what you had, I was unhoused. And I had injured my ankle and I was on a walker. And when the day it happened, like in Chinatown, everything shut down. I had to hobble like for 2 damn hours try to find a bathroom.
Right.
I'm not even talking about going to the restaurants or going because I had SNAP, the GR SNAP.
Right.
You know, you go in there to get hot food. There was nothing there to eat because
right.
nobody was allowing you in there.
Right.
So though I said, damn, so I got to go hobble to a grocery store. And then I hobble in the grocery store. Then you got people hoarding crap. And you can't get food in there.
Right.
So, you know, so even the trying to do canned goods, you crap out of luck because you can't get any of this stuff.
Right.
So, but that's the other story. But you're right. That's really overlooked. People don't talk about that much.
Right. And so the situation that played out today, that particular brother,
mm-hmm.
2 weeks ago, there was another healing march and they held it on the beach. And
mm-hmm.
I had come there through sort of like a middle class hippie-ish camp kind of a thing.
Right.
And then they came to and he has all these flags. And
mm-hmm.
everybody knows Flag Man.
knows
his history. His brother like is works with him. So I was, you know, bumbling along, but
mm-hmm.
I, you know, for the healing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I happened to just walk up right when I hear him, the same brother,
mm-hmm.
say, you know, my Black Lives didn't matter, yelling it at a group of Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, what the hell? So I walk over actually with my audio recorder on
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, brother, what's going on? You okay? Like,
mm-hmm.
what's the deal? And he explained the whole situation and they came on the thing, they
mm-hmm.
asked him to move. They moved. They asked for a few minutes on the mic to explain why they were doing the thing with
mm-hmm.
the flag and the thing. And then basically like, we're told, like, this isn't about you. Like, this is kind of about us. And this is about healing people who've been walking in marches. So while you have your issues, like...
Just go on to the side and
like,
shut up.
Yeah, basically. And then, well, they were like, we made a program.
Uh-huh.
This is what they said. We made a program. And there were people allotted to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these were artists, you know, singers who have, like, tons of followers.
Mm-hmm.
And they've offered to do this for free. This is the response to the brother who lives on the street
mm-hmm.
from the young organizer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they... And so, yeah, so then they tell him, you know, like, we could just add you into the program
mm-hmm.
because there was a program.
Mm.
You feel me?
So
he's saying, like, yeah, but I live here.
Right. I'm a resident. I'm a neighbor here.
Right.
Yeah, I get you.
You're standing on where I sleep. And like you're talking about Black Lives Matter, and you have and you've done 8 different musical numbers,
mm-hmm.
and had 6 people read poetry
mm-hmm.
who don't actually live on this block.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so then, what are you replicating,
mm-hmm.
and the design of what you're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
When your way to do it,
yeah.
But then they were like, so this it's really nuanced, right?
Yeah.
So they came to the block, they
okay.
did,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and so. But it's like, you know how long you got to be on the block before people really trust you, fuck with you.
Yeah, because you don't know what, you know, if these people are, you know, do-gooders or white saviors or whatever they bag is.
Yeah, a bunch of white
scammers or, you know, religious fanatics and things like that.
Or what their intentions are to do with you or with your image
mm-hmm.
or with your whatever.
Yeah.
So when they come by, like, kind of like, do you want to hop on the mic? It's kind of like, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
Where you come from? And like, why should I trust you?
Exactly.
But like that, because that's a necessary survival tactic.
Exactly. Because you're actually on the street.
Live.
Yeah.
But that's not their reality.
Mm-mm.
They have brands. They're like, you can look me up. You can go to my Instagram or my Facebook.
of course you can look me up and see my whole background. And the brother's like you know, and so, and even the artists, these artists have a lot of followers. Mm-hmm. That's what they're trying to tell the brother. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's that's your, there's two different cultures at play.
A tale of two cities. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they're meeting now, mm-hmm. in this George Floyd moment. Mm-hmm. And it's like, whose city are we upholding?
Mm-hmm.
Because are you upholding the other city that mm-hmm. has a schedule and has a thing?
Right. Yeah.
You know? Or are you upholding the one where, like, some shit pops off on the block and you stop and you see what's up?
Yeah.
And everything that might have been your plan for... I have learned not to make any plans when I'm coming to the block.
Exactly.
Meet me at 10 o'clock? No.
Exactly. That's very true.
Meet me on this corner?
I was just telling someone, I said, you know, it's moment to moment. You could have the best laid plans and then cops jump off or have you up against the wall, take your stuff, and then now you're at zero and you got to start your whole freaking day backwards in order for you to get forward.
And it might take you 2 or 3 days to just get back to the vibe that you were on before I got fucked up.
Yeah.
Right?
Like when you get robbed and shit, yeah, I know. Yeah. I know, like, perfectly.
Just that one little item that connected a bunch of stuff. You know?
Man, I lost my ID and social security card down in Chinatown. And this is like over 7 or 8 times I've lost it. Man, I was so freaking mad because I lost it during COVID. And I couldn't get, you know, like the whole, and I'm not from here. Chicago just shut down. I mean, there ain't nobody giving no birth certificates out. There ain't nobody there. So I'm like, how am I going to get this? How am I going to get a social security card? How am I going to get my housing? Because I got all of this stuff I need. And I couldn't get it because things are shut down. So now I'm like, so where am I going to go? You know, so that's another reality that, you know, it's a saying that's got that says, you ever want to get God to laugh, tell him your plan,
right? So I've learned to just be like, I'm hitting the block later.
Mm-hmm.
I will see you around.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, and so, yeah.
And that's another thing that's built into a lot of these systems.
Exactly.
We were trying to get one of the sisters into the hotel project room key.
Yeah.
And they got to call you back. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and she don't have a phone, so she's in my phone. She's mm-hmm. in Dottie's phone, this young girl from Santa Monica College,
mm-hmm.
Who'd be out on the block helping people.
Right.
And so you're playing phone tag for 5 days with so-and-so in the office because mm-hmm. they have layers of, like, stuff they need to process.
Exactly.
Why couldn't you figure out that system if you know I don't got no phone?
But then also, here's the thing too. Like, then they get you in there, then there's a whole nother process.
It's
that
a
you
whole
gotta,
another process.
You got to get wanded, like you're in jail. You got curfew. I mean, and the thing is, when people tell you all these things, and then I had people tell me people going in their rooms, taking their stuff and stuff. So it's a whole different reality that people have no idea what's going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's the sort of salt in the wound when you're sitting on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this happened to him the last week with mm-hmm. a bunch of young people and mm-hmm. artists.
Right.
And then it happens again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I was trying to tell the elders. Love you, too. I was trying to tell the elders this,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's a tricky thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nuanced, right?
Yeah.
Because they're trying to plan and they're trying to curate and they're trying to bring people in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can talk all day. I talk too much.
Yeah.
I was trying to tell David, which is a thing I've dealt with my whole life, so I'm just kind of used to the flow of it.
Mm-hmm.
I am loud. And I'm dramatic, and I'm an artist, and I'm passionate. Mm-hmm. I scream, and mm-hmm. I yell, and I cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
and it's very raw for me, mm-hmm. and like not thought out, and not planned, and not
mm-hmm.
always respectful, even. You know,
mm-hmm.
But if there is an expectation that real change is going to come about mm-hmm. without that.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is not a part of the
mm-hmm.
event,
mm-hmm.
then to a certain extent, the vibe is off.
Mm-hmm.
If nobody screamed at nobody.
Hey, dude, how are you?
If nobody, you know, imagine being on the block mm-hmm. for 4 hours
yeah.
and you only hear one person talking to themselves or screaming. You know how out of character that would be
yeah.
the vibe of the
yeah.
land that you're standing
yeah,
on?
Yeah, yeah.
Shameful or embarrassing or hurtful experience to a complete stranger, and we base too many of our policy decisions based on that false narrative as opposed to the deeper one that we have to sometimes shovel out.
Councilmember Barney, I'm glad you're saying this because like part of it is like when
you break that barrier and it accepts help. For example, I just heard yesterday from some of the unhoused community, they are worried and they're in Project Loonkey. And they're getting the news that they're going to be thrown out of Project Loonkey and evicted out of it. And that also causes some resistance when people do come up and offer help because they can't trust it because they will lose some of the things that they are used to survive on the street and then go into this and it's not what they anticipated. How do we, what do we do to try to stem the tide? What can we do to address these rumors about Project Loonkey? Is Project Loonkey coming to an end?
Honestly, I wish I had a more definitive answer for you. I have heard from some of the service providers that their funding is limited and is expiring, and that obviously creates a lot of the rumors and a lot of the fear. Then I'm hearing, you know, it was in this morning's paper today, as we're recording this Friday, that Lhasa is about to ramp up. And really wants to expand Project Loonkey. I think it's an open question. I don't think there's anybody who is looking to end Project Loonkey, but I don't know that the commitments have been made to continue it. So there is a baked in uncertainty there. And
anxiety.
And an anxiety. And yeah. I think sometimes, you know, it's easy for the policymakers, for the bureaucracy to think, okay, well, if the funding expires on X date, as long as we take care of it by X minus one, we're fine. But it does impact the decision of someone, do I leave my community and go into this other place? What am I going to lose if I do that? One of the things I've tried to communicate to people that live in my district, they're often baffled by why someone won't leave an encampment to go to a shelter. And I've heard over the past several years, oh, the emergency winter shelter is open. I offered to give somebody a ride, and they said no. See, they're service resistant. They want to stay on the street. And I've tried to pivot it and explain, you know, a different scenario or a different perspective that you're living on the street. You've been traumatized, victimized, had false promises repeatedly to you. Suddenly a stranger comes up to you and says, I'm going to take you away from everything that is familiar to you and take you to someplace else. No, you can't bring your dog. No, your spouse can't come with you. No, you got to leave your belongings here. I'm going to take you someplace else. You don't really know where it is. And, oh, by the way, they're going to throw you out at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
That's a very different thing. And it's why I think a developing appreciation of that, I think, is why the city eventually got around to trying to do bridge housing as opposed to the emergency winter shelter. One of the things.
Can I ask a question about the bridge shelter? Because my audience sometimes may not know what bridge shelter is outside of jail. So bridge shelter is a shelter that is designed to get unhoused people off the street. But it's a little bit different because they have, I think, they work to try to get them in housing, if I'm correct. Is that the right thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'll sort of go broader since your audience may not be as familiar with some of the dynamics in Los Angeles is. From my perspective, historically, Los Angeles, and this may be the case in other places as well, but historically, Los Angeles has tried to respond to homelessness with one, maybe two solutions at a time. And for a very long time, the solution in Los Angeles was permanent supportive housing or nothing else. Or maybe permanent supportive housing and maybe a limited number of fairly crappy and not particularly good emergency shelters. And one of the things I've always tried to do is broaden the range of services and options that are being offered, given that permanent supportive housing is taking forever. We're letting people live and suffer and die on the streets in the meantime, and there's got to be a better way. So one of the things the city started doing a couple of years ago, and it's done it slowly and very expensively, is create what we have called bridge housing, which is a series of I guess 20 or so different, mostly 100 bed transitional shelters around the city, either trailers or membrane tents, which are unlike the emergency shelter program. They are 24/7. They have staffing in place to help do housing placement, case management, facility storage. You can bring your pets. And the idea of bridge housing, which has sort of been really upended by COVID-19, the idea of bridge housing is that it was supposed to be a place to get you off of the street, out of the encampment, while they're finding something more long-term. And the idea was that you'd have 100 beds, but over the course of the year, each bed would serve several people because you'd be moving people through. COVID has totally
dampened that. Yeah.
That a lot.
Well, I have a question too, because there's a conversation with people that I never heard of until as it brought to my attention. When you create bridge shelters, there's things called enforcement zones, and I was wondering why? Because you know you only have 100 beds, and the unhoused people still, and actually with over 60,000 unhoused people, if we create these things, where are the unhoused going to go? If we create these enforcement zones, that because there's been a push with some NIMBYs to reinstitute police officers and business improvement districts to crack down on that and reinstitute enforcement zones. And for the audience, can you explain what enforcement zones are and how can we, because I feel that's maybe not forward thinking because we got 60,000 unhoused people and we're not magically going to, once we have 100 people in our shelter, that they're not magically going to, especially with the complexities of false promises and other things that go on with the life of unhoused people. That, could we talk a little on that?
Yeah, so when the mayor proposed bridge housing in his State of the City speech a couple years ago now, the way he framed it, the way he proposed it, in the way it was pitched to communities was you get a shelter that will be an alternative to people living in encampments, and it, in exchange for the neighborhood taking the shelter, because almost every neighborhood pushes back against them, as we
might. The NIMBY movement.
You get enhanced enforcement, cleanup, and restrictions on camping in the area nearby. And that has been upended by a couple different things. One is homelessness has continued to increase dramatically. Even though, I mean, it certainly doesn't look this way, but even though LA City and LA County and Lhasa are housing people at a greater clip than they ever have, much greater clip than they ever have, people are becoming or re-becoming homeless at a greater rate than we're housing them. And COVID-19 is exacerbating that dramatically, and we can see it on the streets everywhere. In the middle of this, in March, I think it was the last meeting the city council had before we went into stay-at-home orders and started doing Zoom meetings. I got the council to agree to follow CDC guidelines, which said do not enforce the taking down of tents, because CDC, Centers for Disease Control, says it will actually make the public health crisis worse. Right before our council recess a couple weeks ago, one of my colleagues tried to slip in an emergency proposal, which wasn't noticed to the public in advance, to change that and begin enforcement again. And I managed on a procedural matter to derail that until later. It's going to come back up again. We have consistently got caught LA historically in a fight over punitive measures and and criminalization stuff.
Right.
Vehicular living or sidewalk camping or whatever. And there are times when we have at council spent hours discussing the stuff. And, you know, every council member is hearing from hundreds of people who are saying, my kid can't walk to school because the sidewalks aren't clear. And that's a legit and a genuine concern. And for people with disabilities, it's a legit and genuine concern. But, you know, the responsible, the effective way to respond to that is to have as many and as long and as robust discussions about faster ways and less expensive ways to house people than it is to keep dealing with the consequence of the encampments. And
but this also a conundrum, Councilmember Bonin, is because even though we are trying to do that, they're still the same people that complain about that they can't walk or they feel unsafe for their children. And we say, okay, we hear you. We're going to put some places in the neighborhood where they can be, and then they give you and the unhoused community pushback even on that. And their solutions sometimes can be very dystopian, like flinging us out into near the desert and things like that. So, I mean, you know, it's like it's a catch-22. You want to... And I always say this, and I don't always want to, and this may be an unpopular opinion, it's not all in a city council's fault. It's, and I always say, I want to say in a respect to them that have made the loudest voices, and they have connected with the law enforcement who caters to their calls more so than my call. I mentioned in one of my episodes when I was attacked by three vigilantes that were housed, and I tried to call the police and report them, but I was just discounted. But let me fight back, and I was, they had more of the power to listen to them than they would listen to me. So there is a major imbalance of rights. Like, for example, there's a 311 number to call for encampment, or if you want to report about an unhoused camp. But there is no number for what happens when a group of housed vigilantes throw a bag of crap on me, a feces on me, or try to set me on fire. The only number that they have is 211. So that also buys into the idea that there is something criminally inherent with unhoused community. So that's the thing that I noticed is like, how can we shift to an educational point that being unhoused is not a crime? And I think that's one of the things I really would like more council members to really start talking to the NIMBYs about. Stop calling them on things that they survive with. It's not against the law for an unhoused person to sit in a park. They have the right to sit in a park. They have the right to go to the restroom. Because I've had police call on me about that. Now, some dangerous guy just sitting, just enjoying my ease like anybody else, because they're afraid of the children or the older, the elderly, or things like that. So I think that's one of the things that really disappoints me when, like, I feel like the enforcement zones, that thankfully that they are being upended. But I'm also kind of concerned about with Judge Carter's movement. And for the one audience that's not from California, that there's been some litigious events been going on, and Judge Carter has ruled that unhoused members, due to the safety issues, cannot be over underpasses, overpasses, and nearby within 500 feet. But due to the housing and the COVID-19 pandemic, where are they going to go? And then, two, if people are trying to reinstitute the criminalization piece to dealing with the unhoused problem, that's going to make it even worse. And on top of that, the risk and the eviction, lack of eviction bans and moratoriums that's slowly coming to the end and getting going to be out here, over 40 to 45% of unhoused people going to be on the streets too. So this has looked like we're heading down to a train wreck. That's the better metaphor that I could think of. So can you tell us a little bit about how we're going to accomplish this with Judge Carter giving a deadline to September?
Yeah, sure. And I think it's also important to note for historical context, Judge Carter is the judge who oversaw the litigation over the encampments in Orange County that wound up forcing cities in Orange County to build shelters and put a lot of people in hotel rooms there after some initial concern and some pushback, and has, from what I can tell, at least from my perch on the west side of Los Angeles, has been a pretty successful. There may be a difference of opinion on that. I haven't heard it, but the people have gotten into hotel rooms and people are not dying at the rate they were on the streets. And Judge Carter is now presiding over a case that has been brought, and Judge Carter is very unorthodox. He calls elected officials late at night. He brings people into the room and sort of is almost like a circus ringmaster trying to get them to make deals on the spot. He is absolutely intolerant of the, well, we'll have to check and get back to you in a month philosophy. He's like, no, I want to know in 5 minutes. Give me an answer. So Judge Carter has basically told the city of Los Angeles, you need to get serious about getting people off the street. He has, for whatever reason, focused on the freeway underpasses. I'm not a huge fan of that approach. Yes, there are health risks underneath being that close to the freeway. There are also some benefits to being protected from the elements, the rain, the harsh sunlight. Anybody who's living on the street is exposed to a series of trauma and vulnerability, health and otherwise. And so that wouldn't have been my choice. I also don't have a ton of freeways in my district, so pressure on that doesn't really help me get the resources I need for additional services in my district. Having said that, though, I've spoken to the judge a lot. In fact, I was with him for a couple hours the other day. We met at my office in Westchester, and as I was waiting for him to arrive, one of the LASA outreach workers came over and told me that an unhoused guy named Don, who lived outside the door of my office, had passed away about an hour earlier, as if to underscore, you know, the horrible plight and the urgent need to act in response to homelessness. And London Breed sort of kicked off that in San Francisco. Herb Wesson and a number of my colleagues put in a motion, which I fully support. This weekend, BLM is having a big public meeting in South LA about the issue, where myself and a number of electeds are going not to talk, but to listen. Not just about what the problem is, but what the solution should be and how the alternative should be crafted. Equally important, though, and maybe in some ways more so, because it touches more people on really a daily basis, is the intersection of policing and transportation or mobility. Whether it's the Metro system, and I'm a board member of Metro, or it's LAPD and the city with traffic stops. People who are Black and Brown are disproportionately targeted by law enforcement for fare evasion or a broken taillight or whatever. And we want to end the phenomenon of people getting pulled over for driving while Black. Sure. And if you do not have freedom of movement on the transit system, walking in your neighborhood, driving across Los Angeles, if you don't have freedom of movement, you don't have freedom. And Mark Bucyrus Dawson, Herb Wesson, and Karen Price and I, with the full support of our Department of Transportation, are trying to create a different model on how to do that. We'd be the first, I think, in the country to do it, to get police out of traffic and enforcement. But we're going to be working with BLM, and we're going to be working with Push LA and Stop the Stops and trying to create something different, because we just need to, Melina Abdullah has said it. I mean, we need to reimagine public safety. And, if now isn't the moment, I don't know when the hell it's going to be.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Councilmember Mike Bonin. My time is almost up on the Zoom. and I want to thank my listeners who have been watching and listening. Thank you all for listening to this a very impactful conversation that we really need to have. And I hope, again, we meet in the light of understanding. Thank you again,
Councilmember. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to episode 29. In order to know where we're going, we must know where we have been. If we destroy every element or every edifice that tells of our stories and our struggles, then we won't know the price that was paid. Thanks to Theodore Henderson from Wedian House. I thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a one-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give Love and Logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.